NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks from the West Coast. Matthew, this whole idea of blowing up the Blues and gathering up a bunch of draft picks and prospects, the Blues have other ideas. The players and the coaching staff making a strong statement here, as you've written about here in the Post.
Yeah, so 5-1-1 since coming back from the Four Nations break now. That includes Wednesday night's 3-2 shootout win in Los Angeles. That's their last game before the trade deadline. They ended the night 1 point back of Calgary, and I guess Vancouver is also tied with them for the second wild card in the Western Conference. So the Blues have played two more games than those teams, so that is something to take into account. But the fact that they are, you know, 1 point back after being 8 points back just 2 weeks ago, that is something that's, it happens fast. You know, at the break they were closer to a top five pick than they were to a playoff spot, and suddenly they're 1 point out of a playoff spot. They're playing good hockey, and they're not just going on a fluky hot streak. You know, like I think we've talked about this before, like they are winning these games that they deserve to win. And I think that's the most encouraging part about this, if you're a Blues fan, is that this seems to be somewhat sustainable. You know, they've consistently played so much better at 5-on-5, particularly defensively under Jim Montgomery. And we talked about them not just getting the results. They weren't getting the results because maybe inconsistent goaltending, because the penalty kill was one of the worst in the league. And you look at this recent stretch, the only game that they lost, they gave up 4 power play goals. And the only game they lost in regulation, I should say. And every other game, their kill's kind of been pretty decent. I mean, I think it was 2-for-2 last night. They went on an 8-for-8 run across 4 or 5 games, and they got found pretty good results. So if the penalty kill can be 75% to 80% instead of 70%, I think they're going to be in a good position, because their 5-on-5 play has been really good for a few months now.
One of the things that struck me is the vibe that you've written about, which is why we have you on the road with the team every day. The Jordan Binnington, speaking of the love in the room. And, you know, and this is not a small matter, because there are a lot of teams that have been in a rebuild for a long time. And this has been a topic we've had many discussions about. Some of these teams just never get that vibe. They get a lot of good young players. They make some big moves. The team looks better on paper, but it doesn't get better on the ice, you know. And this team is trying to prove that it can build that sort of vibe that Doug Armstrong was hoping to see as they start loading in younger players to go with the core group. So it seems like they're accomplishing the goal, not just for this season, but for future seasons.
Yeah, it's a boisterous room to be in. You know, after morning skates, guys are coming off, they're singing. They walk off the ice and they're singing. They walk off the ice, they're joking around with each other. They're debating where to put Jobu in the dressing room. Quick backstory on Jobu. Gordo, you've seen Major League, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, just a little.
Yeah, like some of these younger players on the Blues haven't seen it, but they do have a Jobu figurine that travels with them on the road. Now, I've seen, the first time I saw it was before that Seattle game at home. He had a locker next to Zach Bolduc. Eventually, they made a nameplate for him. They have one at home. They have one on the road. It just says Jobu. And so yesterday, after morning skate, they're arguing about where Jobu's stall needs to be. Like, these are the topics that are on their mind right now, because things are going so well, that the energy is so good. Maybe they want to keep the good vibes going, and superstitious about his placement. So it's one of the feelings that, you know, it's tough to get when you're being told that you're playing well, but you're not seeing the results. It's like, yeah, you played well, but you lost again. You played well, but you lost again. And suddenly they're winning, and the good vibes have followed. And I think what Jake Nabors said last night all too was also pretty interesting in that he said, yeah, we've learned that working hard is fun. And I think you see with every shot block, even like the first period, if there's a big shot block, the bench will stand up. They'll put their sticks over the boards and start tapping them. I think you can look at two different penalties that the Blues drew last night and point to hard work being fun. And it's both roughing penalties in front of the Blues bench. They both came on hits that they finished. Zach Boldu finished on, I think it was Trevor Lewis. Lewis gave him a shot right back after, and Boldu drew a roughing. And then the other one, Nathan Walker, gave Kevin Fiala a shove into the boards, and Fiala pushed back, and the Blues drew a penalty out of that. Like, that's finishing your checks when you don't always have to. And so they're finishing the checks in front of their own bench. They get some energy out of that. Jake Nabors said, you know, working hard is fun, and the results have helped that. Like, that's what brings the energy around, is when you see your teammates working hard, you see the results on the ice, you see the results in the standings. Like, it's a different vibe than just even 2 weeks ago when they're coming back from the break. And that's been a theme that, you know, both Jim Montgomery and the players have talked about, is having that work ethic and having it change to a point where they're enjoying it.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. I mean, one, you need leadership from the coaching staff to push that, to keep pushing that that challenge. And Jim Montgomery is demanding it, but positive and a good communicator. And he's managed to gain buy-in. And the other part of it, and you've been around hockey a long time now, you've seen it, and you've seen it one way and you've seen it the other way, but there's a contagion there. There's a, it can organic. Things can go well organically, and it can build, or it can go the other way organically and sink. Right now, the team, as it did, you know, not that it's going to make a cup run, but most dramatically in modern Blues history, that 19 cup run was just organic growth from a team that was in horrible shape at the time that it started. Not that this team's going to make that kind of run, but it shows you that it can happen, that it just collectively builds guy to guy, game to game, shift to shift, just things on the ice, things off the ice. And just give credit to the coaching staff and team leadership, but then it just either it happens or it doesn't.
Yeah. And you know, it's the way that they're playing too. They've controlled games for the most part, and they've done it a lot with defense, and that hasn't translated to the penalty kill. We know that, but you know, last night was the eighth straight game that the Blues allowed 30 or fewer shots in a game. And they had a streak of 9 earlier this season. And that was after Jim Montgomery took over. So it's not like it's a foreign concept. But I am going to blow your mind a little bit right now. Just a little, Gord, are you ready? I think he's ready.
I was bracing myself.
I was like, well, man, I thought we were an audio podcast here, and the long pause kind of threw me off. So these two stretches of not allowing 30 shots on goal in 8 straight games, that hasn't been done since the Blues won the Cup. They went 16 straight games in, you know, January and February of 18-19, of that 18-19 season. And you know, I would imagine part of that was the long winning streak they went on, was 11 games that year. But this is something that hasn't been happening in the last 6 years. They haven't been playing this consistently defensively since that time. Like, it didn't happen when they were the best team in the West in 1920 in the regular season. It didn't happen when they were, you know, potentially going to upset the eventual cup winners in Colorado in, was it 22? And obviously it hasn't happened in the last few years when they missed the playoffs. But you know, this is something that's been a buy-in from players, where you're seeing them, you know, maybe forecheck a little bit harder in the offensive zone to set them up better in the defensive zone. You're seeing on shot blocks, you're seeing a lot more commitment to what the Blues have labeled selfless hockey, and you know, laying their bodies out there for each other and changing for each other. And this is a really good stretch for them that, you know, defensively has been among the best in the league, to be quite honest.
You look at two issues with that. One, with Nick Leddy's return, and he's getting getting some of his game back and certainly taking on assignments as he did in the past. You've got six veteran defensemen. Now that Broberg, we can say, is a veteran. So five veteran plus Broberg. That's a pretty good defensive group. When you add Fowler to that group, you added Broberg to that group, Leddy returns. Parayko's playing at a pretty good level. Justin Falk needs to pick up from where he get closer to where he was in the past, but that's a pretty good group. A lot of teams would like to have six defensemen like that. And then the other thing is you've had some offensive, some forward line stability, and you know, third line controlling play a bit better. You wrote about Zach Bolduc. The fourth line's been pretty good all year, and then they found that number one, number two lines with some continuity. The pieces have fit together.
Yeah, and like that part hasn't been as consistent, because there have been times where in, I guess, early to mid-December, the Thomas line was the one that was driving things. Like, I remember he went on that point streak after he was snubbed from the Four Nations roster, and he was one of the best players in the league during that time. And after that, it was the Braden Schenn line that got going, where you had Holloway and Kyrou with him, and they were basically playing number one minutes. They weren't maybe number one by name, but they were number one in usage and everything else. So you had them going at that time, but you didn't have them going at the same time. And recently you're having them a little bit going. I mean, you have Thomas on his 11-game point streak. Buchnevich starts to look a lot more like himself. I think that move he makes in the first minute or two last night in Los Angeles, where he makes a little cut to the middle, drives to the net. The Blues wanted the penalty on it, but that's a confident play from a creative guy. And so you're starting to see him come around. Jake Neighbors has a great game last night. Scores, a nice little backhand goal, and then scores in the shootout again. You have Holloway, who's on a little bit of a hot streak. Bolduc, as you mentioned, is starting to gain some traction in different parts of his game. Matthew Joseph, I thought, has been really good recently since he got benched in the third period, a handful of games ago. He's been really noticeable, showing his speed, showing his physicality, setting up teammates. So they have a lot of different guys going right now. And, maybe that's where the dip comes, because you're not going to have 20 guys always going. Maybe once you have 14 gone, maybe you start losing a few more games. But right now, they have a lot going for them, and they're playing pretty good hockey.
Well, that's how you control play 5-on-5, right? When you actually have all these guys going at the same time and clicking, you're rolling lines. What every NHL coach dreams of, right? To be able to roll lines and get consistency of performance, sustained pressures, be tighten up the play all over the ice. I mean, it's been a process, but man, you have to give Montgomery and the staff some credit, because he's been resolute about they're going to get there. A lot more consistency now, sustaining it, still up, so you're still skating uphill with the games in hand and the challenges ahead in the schedule. At some point, you're just going to have a lull. You just will. And you're not going to get as much help, perhaps, from other teams as you've gotten here lately.
Yeah, and I guess the one good thing for the Blues in that aspect, I believe, Tankathon runs the numbers on remaining schedule, and they have the Blues as the easiest remaining schedule the rest of the season. I think that just accounts for opponent quality, not home road splits. But that's a reason for optimism, just knowing that they do have that in their back pocket, that they might be having a more favorable schedule than other teams.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. O'Reilly
Auto Parts. Talk about Jordan Binnington. Now, I mean, the play in front of him has been much better. generally speaking. But boy, he has a successful spin at the Four Nations, has a clutch performance to lead his country to the championship. He comes back off of that, jumps right back in, and has played at a really high level. They were hoping to see him come back and have a carryover, and he's come back and had a carryover.
Yeah, I think he's won five starts in a row now. And you know, he did take the loss in Dallas. It's a weird way the NHL goaltending records work. I think so. Hofer gave up three, he got pulled, and the game-winning goal for the Stars was the fourth one that they scored, because the Blues ended up with three goals, and so Binnington was in net for that fourth goal, and so he ended up with the loss. It's not like baseball where, you know, you need to get to a tie game and then you have the pitcher of record at that point. So he does get the hard luck loss in Dallas, but you know, as far as his starts go, five wins in a row. And, you know, last night he wasn't asked to make a ton of big saves. I think, you know, he might have wanted, honestly, both of the goals back. I mean, I think the Byfield one was a great shot. It was a little bit around the screen, so you can kind of give him some grace on that one. Obviously, the Moore one that bounces off his skate and across the goal line, I think, is just a tough luck play that he would want to make, you know, differently. But in overtime, in the third period, he makes that big play on Kempe when Kempe is driving down the left wing, and a little tip play at the net. In overtime, there's what, three breakaways that he made saves on. In the shootout, he stopped two or three. Maybe he just needs overtime. Like, I just think back to like his defining moment in the Four Nations tournament was that overtime against the United States in the championship game, when he's making saves on Austin Matthews, he's making saves on Brady Tkachuk, and you know, suddenly the Canada gets the win on the other end, and he was making those types of saves last night in Los Angeles, where he's just robbing guys. Like, I think when you have 19 seconds left in overtime, I think, you know, they had a really long shift out there before with Robert Thomas, and I don't remember if it was Buchnevich out there with him at that time, but you know, it's an ozone draw. Montgomery puts out Sundqvist, and then he realizes, hey, no, let me just call a timeout. Let me get Thomas back out there because I want him out there for the faceoff. And so he gets arrested, Thomas out there, wins a faceoff. Everything worked as planned. Everything worked to Jim Montgomery's plan. Called a timeout, got his number one center out there, won the faceoff, and then Colton Parayko falls down. And Trevor Moore off to the races on a breakaway. Last few seconds of overtime, everything had kind of set up well for the Blues, and Jordan Binnington made sure that it didn't bite them in the butt because he makes a big save. So just a big moment for the group, for him to be able to step up and make that save, and plus the ones before it too, on Deneau, on Byfield in overtime. So yeah, I think now you start wondering about the next. I think they have three more back-to-backs, right? They have Anaheim, Los Angeles this weekend. They have Minnesota, Anaheim, I guess it's about 9-10 days. And then later in March, Chicago, Nashville, back-to-back. So you have three more back-to-backs the rest of the season. Knowing how well Bennington's playing, how poorly Hofer showed in Dallas, and where you are in the standings, like, at what point do the Blues consider going with Binnington on back-to-back games? You know, I don't know.
Well, you do it in SoCal, yeah, not sure about that coming back from Minnesota and playing Anaheim thing. That might be a little tricky, but yeah. But it's you know, he's I did feel bad for Joel. Man, he just had that stumble in the crease, and then getting just had a bad look about it, right? That goal was an awkward moment, and it just, you know, it was just tough. And to me, it hammered to me when Montgomery made the changes. Like, oh yeah, they are trying to win every game here, aren't they?
Yeah,
right. He's coaching with urgency. Like, oh man, that was quick and back to back. Like, no, we're trying to win the game here. It wasn't like so. Yeah, I think it's with Binnington. He talks about those moments as being fun. And I've been around goalies who, you know, didn't have that sort of sense of when there's scrambles. He thinks those goal mouth scrambles are fun. When he loses a stick and he's making octopus saves, he thinks that stuff's fun. Breakaways, that's fun. you know, 3-on-3 with a, you know, guys blowing in on him. Yeah, that's fun. He, you know, guy's a competitor. He can be unorthodox. He's still trying to win over the hockey media in terms of his, where he ranks among goalies, but man, he is not a, he does not cower from those scenarios.
Yeah. I think like those moments are his moments, right? I think we've talked about this before, but being a big game goalie, it's kind of his reputation. And I think you look at the overall numbers and you say like, he hasn't had that good of a season. Last year, obviously tremendous. This season, not as good. But the big games he's showed up for, I think we've listed them off before. Opening night in Seattle, really good. Going home to play in Toronto, really good. The Winter Classic in Chicago, he was great. He made that big save on Taylor Hall that and kind of preserved the game. And it ended up being a blowout, but that Hall save in the second period was huge. He goes to Four Nations, doesn't have the best round robin. I think anyone would probably agree with that. But in the championship game, showed up when Canada needed him. And now he has this stretch run with the Blues to kind of further, you know, cement that as a big game goalie. And, you know, he'll have, I guess it's 19 games left for the Blues. I don't know how many he'll get out of those, but he'll have his chances to kind of drag this team into the playoffs.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the trade deadline. It's things have definitely quieted down to a degree, not completely, as you wrote. There's still noise around the Blues because, you know, the Toronto media is looking for any option for the Maple Leafs to add another center and connect, making the connection between Chief and Braden Schenn. But the team's played well, and I think a lot of the insiders are acknowledging that, well, that the dynamic has changed, you know, that you don't see I don't think you see five Blues really high on the list of, you know, whether it's Nick Kiprios or another insider that in terms of getting traded, something could happen. There's always that possibility, but man, I got to think that scenario has changed now, and the players have shown it. They've expressed it the way the team is playing. It seems like maybe Doug got what he wanted by making the threat and doesn't have to do something.
Yeah, and this is more of a my gut feeling than anything, but it feels like there's not going to be much that's going to be happening in the next day, and obviously that can all change quickly. But I also think Doug Armstrong is not the type of guy who makes his decisions based on a week of games. Or, you know, if you look at last night in Los Angeles, what if that goes differently? I don't think he makes his decisions based on one game, on one week. That's just not really good GMing, to be quite honest, to make your decisions based on a hot streak or a cold streak. And it's just always been, you had to squint to see the fits, right? Like, we've talked about the value that Braden Schenn has with the Blues and how that might not be the same on another team. You know, I was talking to someone about this the other day, and they mentioned, you know, Boone Jenner in Columbus. And they said, yeah, like Boone Jenner is really important to the Blue Jackets and what he brings off the ice, how he plays. You know, teams might be interested in him, but they look at the cap hit, they look at the production, and, you know, they say, why should we give up that much for that? And, you know, Braden Schenn is in a similar, not the same boat, but that boat where he means a lot more to the team that he's on than he would as a 33-year-old 45-point center with $6.5 million on the cap and 3 more years on the contract. So it always felt like a value disparity there. And, you know, there's also the no trade that's involved. And, you know, he has roots in St. Louis. He loves being in St. Louis. And I'm sure there are situations where he would want to waive and move, but he'd also be moving midseason. Like, it's not fun. Like, both times he's been traded, like one time he wasn't even in the NHL, right? And one time he was traded in the summer. So that's one aspect of this Schenn stuff that you can also see the summer, and like that's when his no trade protection drops to about half the league. The cap goes up in the summer, so the teams won't have to worry about fitting 6.5 in right now. 6.5 in the summer is going to be easier than right now. And so, like, if you still wanted a return and some team met you there, there are other opportunities to do so. It doesn't have to be right now, particularly with the team playing, you know, as well as I have for the last month or so, if we're looking at underlying numbers and how they've played against some good teams as well. So that's the Shen part. I mean, the Parayko and Bennington stuff didn't really make a ton of sense. You know, Buchnevich has always had a no trade clause since he signed his extension in the summer. That was reported back then. And so I think the combination of his no trade and his lack of overall production made him unlikely. You know, I do think there still is a market for Ryan Suter. You know, I was talking to someone and they kind of thought that Suter could fetch a second or a third round pick, which felt high to me, felt pretty high to me. But we just saw Brian Doolin get traded for a second round pick. So, and he's twice as expensive as a Suter is. So it's the fact that there's not a lot of sellers out there. There's a lot of teams in the hunt, and there's a lot of teams that like are motivated to stay in the hunt. Like Columbus, after the season that they've had, the offseason that they had, like making the playoffs would mean the world to that organization. Detroit wants to end their streak. Ottawa wants to end their streak. I mean, the Blues want to be in the, you know, after missing 2 years. And, you know, I don't think Doug Armstrong wants to go into his last summer as GM missing the playoffs three times and staring down the possibility of missing four times. Like, I don't think he wants to go out like that, right? And Utah, they have their, you know, first season in Salt Lake. They want to be in the playoffs. So there's a lot of teams that have external motivations to stay in the hunt. So there's not a lot of teams selling. And you look at Suter and the reliable depth defenseman who is cheap. Like, he's a lead minimum cap hit. The only thing with him is teams using LTIR will have to account for his $500,000 bonus for making the playoffs. So that'll be one thing that teams will have to look out for. But he's a cheap guy, relatively, you know, he's reliable, and there's not a lot of sellers. So that kind of adds up to being a decent return. Like, I don't know if I truly believe second or third round pick, but I honestly, the Brian Dumoulin return this morning kind of makes me believe a little bit more.
Yeah, teams, I mean, the desperation settles in on D-men, right? And that's why I've always been optimistic that there could be something there for somebody. And again, even a guy like Nick Leddy, I don't know that having term left is so onerous. Seth Jones goes for, who's a better player, obviously, but, you know, $7 million a year for till 2030, you know, that is what it just shows you that defensemen, it's a whole different world for sure. And teams, even these some of these picks over the last couple of years, some of these pickups teams have made really high prices for guys that are third pair D-men. So we'll see about that. Broadly speaking, Matt, when you look at the scenario, for the reasons you mentioned, it may well be that the most exciting things at this trade deadline have already occurred, unless there's a Mikko Rantanen trade when if the Hurricanes get to that point, and you've talked about, well, you might as well try to win the cup while you got them, and you still want to win a cup there. and you've had really good teams. So, I mean, there's a case made for keeping him. And frankly, you look around and, man, there just may not be much happening.
Yeah, you get the sense that, you know, obviously there's not a lot of teams selling. The contenders, they're either capped up or they're in LTIR, and then they have some cap space to spend that way. But, you know, some of the prices have been pretty high, and this is, you know, higher than normal, or maybe not. You know, I think about trade deadlines in the past, and did Nick Ritchie once go for a first round pick, or am I misremembering the old Nick Ritchie trade? Whenever that happens, I think it went to Boston. But like the fact that like players are going for above market value, I would say, is not conducive to the market being active, right?
That's why you got your finance degree. You understand market. I'm just
making stuff up right now, Gordo.
Well, that's Matthew DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon here at the NetFront. Quick programming note from the NetFront. Here at the Post-Dispatch, subscribers power most of our work, allowing us to cover the Blues completely, and that includes producing this podcast. Starting next week, that front presence will be available exclusively to our MVPs, our Post-Dispatch subscribers. If you're already a subscriber, thanks. You'll be able to hear this podcast at stltoday.com/podcast. If not, please join our growing audience by going to stltoday.com/story to see our offers.